what store is this
all
under?
Right. welcome to the Toddcast, which you can find at NDC Toddcast. Yes. As I help Tim navigate to the Toddcast page at NDC Toddcast. You'll find it straight there. If you go to the events page there, then you can click on the event and go to discussion, and it'll you'll be able to watch it. So, and if anybody has any comments, just pop in there, say some stuff, and we will get back to you as soon as we can. Feel free to ask questions about anything, guys. We're pretty good about things. And we love it when people give us random things to talk about.
We do.
So, I am your host, John. I am here literally every time. Mostly because the Zoom Pro is under my email. So, but I'm the regional manager for NDC. If you, it's your first time listener or watcher. Normally I am joined by Bo Pritz, who's the manager over at our Ohio Valley store, but he had a couple weeks he needed to take off for some stuff. So, I've asked, one of my amazing assistant managers at the waterfront store, Tim Cope, to join us, who is, hanging out in his wife's kimono, which is pretty sexy, may I add.
I call it a kimono when I'm wearing it. And, John, thanks for having me. I'm a first-time caller, long-time listener, and I'm glad to be here talking about some things that I don't know, but some things that I do know, and just chit-chat about some cool shit. So,
I mean, that's pretty much what we do every week, is just kind of exactly that, chit-chat about some cool shit. Yeah. First, some housekeeping stuff, just, you know, some NDC events coming up this week, or starting this week, are the early birds for the basement sale on January 30th. So if you've never been to an NDC basement sale, it's a ton of fun. It's 500,000 sorted dollar books in the basement. And, you know, everything's a buck. Everything's sorted. You can get a long box there on the day for $250. Or you can do the early bird, which is you pre-buy a long box for $250 plus a $50 early entry fee. So you're committing to a long box for $300 plus tax. Then you can go up Thursday, Friday, Saturday, or Sunday this week or next week, leading up to the sale, and shop the basement while one of us just is down there. Probably going to be, somebody's going to be pulling back issues from one of the stores or doing another project, but we just kind of hang out. We may talk to you. We may just go, here's the rules, and leave you be. But I've seen people go in there and, you know, start with a single box and come out with three more. Anything you buy past that long, that initial long box, you just get more. It's awesome. So
June 6th last year was my first time. So first time tips, write down your list or take screenshots on your phone, because the reception can be spotty downstairs. And if you want to make sure you're getting stuff off your list, have something visible, instead of, like, you know, CLZ pulling up your app or something like that. I went in with the intention of buying like $100 worth of books, and ended up taking like $560 worth of books home, because everything is back issue quality and looks awesome, and, you know, don't miss it. It happens a couple times a year and it's freaking awesome. Like I said, June 6th last year was my first time, and I will be going on the 30th this year. So
awesome. Oh, it looks like Bo's at home watching, or he's listening on his drive back from, he was at your store today digging dollar books, I know, for a while. So
yeah, I know. I stopped by and saw him there. That's cool. For a bit. So,
well, thank you for those excellent first timer points. You know, I have obviously been a little jaded being able to be there all the time. So for sometimes I forget about some things. Weirdly, I had just missed you that day. You and your wife were walking down the street. You were right by the bank, and I was like, oh, so I was trying to find a place to park.
I saw Todd in passing because he's like 6'8" and he was like the tallest guy there, and I'm like, hey, check it out. There's a, and it was like, oh, that's Todd. So don't, you know, say anything. but yeah, that was my first time. So we'll call that segment Tim's First Time Tips.
Right. So, no, okay. It was awesome. That was good.
Yeah, it was fun.
But yeah, January 30th. So we opened the store early at 8 o'clock. We closed late at 7 o'clock, and we're allowing up to 50 people in the basement this time. At a time. Nice. The last time was 40. The first time we did it was 30. You know, as restrictions get a little better, we'll lighten that up a little more, but 50 was pretty manageable. Now that's just in the basement. There's also a top stock of stuff that's going to be there. And there's going to be about 25. We'll say 20. There's going to be about 20 boxes that's going to be premiering that day of brand new dollar stock upstairs that
oh, nice.
The early bird people will not have access to. Normal shoppers will not have access to. And we're going to put it out. I'm going to get there at like 7:30 in the morning and help Jason put it out. So
nice.
But I will be there. You can come see me, say hi.
If you're coming from out of town, everybody's got different rules in different states for masks. So just make sure you have your mask and you yes. wear it and you have it over your nose and just practice social distancing. If you went into the Amazing Spider-Man section, I yelled spider last time and somebody moved and I got right in there. So,
yes. I mean, granted, the Spider-Man section is the amazing section. It's like an entire tabletop because there's so many books.
Yeah, it is.
So, but if you're, you know, if you're coming to fill like a run of 80s and 90s stuff, like there's a good chance we're gonna have most of it there. You know, obviously most keys are not going to be down there. You might find a couple little bit like small minor keys, but nothing super crazy. Every once in a while you'll find an Easter egg though.
Got a good bit of I filled in a good bit of Amazing Spider-Man, Uncanny X-Men, and then I was actually surprised there was a good bit of Deadly Class there because I've kind of jumped onto that show or that book when the show came out, and then now I'm just like all in on that. But so there's a lot of variety of stuff down there. It's pretty overwhelming, so come prepared. There's no level of preparedness that is too much.
that is also true. You know, and a lot of these guys, they come back every time to do it. A lot of the guys that have been doing the early bird, a lot of them are repeats because once they did it, they realized, man, this is awesome not having to fight to get in there. We are doing 5 people a day for each of the early bird settings. So just make sure you can buy that online. You can get the link at ndcomics.com. It's in the scrolling thing in the front that talks about the basement sale. You can click right on the link, buy it online, and then the store will call you to set up what day you want to come in. So lots of fun, super cool. All right. And then after that, the following Saturday, the first Saturday of February, I believe, is Cranberry's anniversary sale. So that will be half off dollar books, 10% off a bunch of stuff. I think 20% off a couple things too, but most of the store's on sale. It's going to be a good time. Just come out.
They're always fun.
Hang out. Yeah. I'll be there for that too. It'll probably be me and John. So you'll have the team John there. It'll be good times at the smallest store we have, which is great. So real quick, before we hop into comics, I just want to show people as you know, in Tim's store, we moved a bunch of stuff from one building to another building. It seems like every year and a half or so we moved that store lately. And one of the cool things we had on display there was an original piece of art from Scott McDaniel that we used for Three Rivers Comic Con. And I actually own that piece. And in the shuffle of everything, it kind of got lost. Well, we finally found it. I just want to show you guys the original art of that, which is freaking awesome in my opinion. So that's going to go on my wall of original art and prints that are signed that I have over here that I'll show Tim later. So
yeah, we had been looking for that because we were worried that when we moved, we lost it.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I was real happy to find it. So
we were finding all kinds of terrible prints that we didn't want to find. like, no, where's the one we want?
John's going to kill us if we don't find this.
Those were the exact words I think we did say, too.
It's okay. It's okay. We found it, and we're okay. So before we get into comics even more, I still want to I wanna take a minute to really introduce Tim a little more and kind of let you guys understand who he is, what he does, and what key part of the team he is for us at the Waterfront. So how did you get into comics? How did you end up on the NDC team? And tell the people about some of the cool stuff you do down at the Waterfront as one of the managers.
Well, everybody in my family played basketball, and I sucked at sports at the time. And my mom got me into comics because I was really big into art. So probably since like 9, I've been collecting and reading comic books. I'm sure everybody else is younger, but probably around like 9 or 10. My grandma had a little corner convenience store. I'm old enough to remember going down and buying 50-cent comic books off of like the spinner racks where they would put the actual sticker on the book. And, you know, when then you're 20 and looking through it and you're kind of pissed off, you're like, hey, this is a key issue. Why did they have to do that? But I've been reading books for a long time. Superman and Spider-Man was kind of like always my thing, but I'm a really big X-Men fan. So everything that's been going on lately, the last 2 years with the House of X and stuff, is just like a treat for me. I just love it all. That's kind of like my, you know, as far as comics go. I've been shopping at NDC since they were in the mall on the very top floor, across from like the Army recruiter station, or, you know, I think they're around the corner or something.
Yeah, we were real close to Sears. And
yeah,
the Army recruiter was kind of across, along with like Cash and Culture.
Yeah.
And there's like that opening that kind of, yeah, like the old Foot Locker that was up there was like a school for a while, and they would do like Project Prom and stuff like that way up on the third floor above the food court. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the manager when I first started going there was Pat.
Wow.
He said a big guy, yeah. Always wore a Superman shirt, really nice guy. Yeah. So, I have been shopping there since then. I worked in web development for a number of years, lost my job, and I was like, I'm tired of working stuff that I don't like. I don't care how, so I went in and they had a thing that was hiring. My wife was like, you should ask him. And I'm like, I don't know. I was like, don't you want me to look for something that's, you know, like in my field that I went to school for? She's like, I just want you to work in something that you like. So went in, kind of got in with another guy named Abbott. He worked there shortly, started bagging and tagging stuff. And then eventually when we moved down to the Waterfront, after I saved the mall manager's life at Century 3 when the table collapsed on her in the great flood of 2018,
the flood that put the death nail in that mall.
Yes. Yeah, but put us into like probably one of the best spots you could be, so it was kind of a blessing in disguise. But
and people talk about they hate a lot on the mall, but I always have a lot of great memories because that's the NDC And I started when it was upstairs, when Jim was running it, which was two managers after Pat, because Pat had moved to Time Tunnel at that point, and then there was Curtis, and then Jim took over, and I was there through Chris Stoner. And
I remember Jim. I remember
Christy,
Jim.
And then Chip and I like became friends, like because we worked together for about a month and a half before I went out to the mills, and you know, and then we moved it downstairs, and everything was it's been crazy, you know. So there's always. There's always part of me that will love that store.
Yeah.
And where we were in the mall. So when people like shit on the mall, I'm like, yeah, kind of, but I have a lot of love. Also, like I have so many good memories there and I've made so many friends there that are still shopping with us today, or I'm just friends with today that don't shop there that I can't, you know, I kind of get mad about it a little bit, but I understand we are definitely in a better place for the business. But I will always have, part of my love will always be there. Same with the mills, like running that store for 3 years you know, I worked at C3 for 3 years, I worked at Mills for 3 years, and now I oversee everybody. And you know, to watch it grow and be part of that, both of those stores, like, it just, it's like, sorry,
they were, it was,
I didn't mean to hijack your story.
They weren't like, usually you go into a comic store and it's this is a little small space and stuff, but not at Century 3. Like, upstairs was huge, downstairs was pretty big. I mean, it's not as big as now we're in an old Best Buy, you know, that's massive, but you know, so I started working there. We moved down the waterfront, and John asked me if I wanted to be an assistant manager, and I was like nervous about what kind of responsibility, and he's like, you're already doing the things that an assistant manager does. He's like, I just want to pay you like how an assistant manager. And I'm like, oh, I was like, how long have I been doing this amount of work for? Can I get some back pay? No, I can't. So I've been doing that. Me, Tim, and Chip down there, and we're pretty close, all of us, and we have a good time, and we didn't really lose a ton of customers when we moved from the mall down there. I was really surprised at how many people transitioned and came there. But now I do your typical assistant manager stuff and checking in and stuff, but I also run dollar auctions usually once every 2 weeks, where I put up awesome books and they all start at $2 and it runs for a week, and you just go on and you post, you know, your bid. And then I do Facebook live sales, like I just finished up maybe about 15, 20 minutes ago, which is, hey, here's some awesome keys that we've, you know, come into that we bought from collections or whatever, and offer those up as kind of like a first pick to people. Hey, these are going to be in the store, but you guys are going to get first pick. I also do things like I'll take variants that have been on the wall for a while, you know, drop them down to $10 and offer them. And if nobody gets them, then So a lot of cool different interactive things. I try to be interactive on like Facebook with people. It's a lot of fun. Everybody comes in, has a good time, you know, so that's pretty much my story. So
It's cool. Keep it up, man.
They call me Time Cop. So
it's just because we moved the E by accident one day, and whoops.
We did, but I got a signed Jay and Silent Bob issue from Kevin Smith, because he came into the store when I was in Texas visiting my brother, and they're like, Kevin Smith is here, and I'm like, you're full of shit. And they're like, no, Kevin Smith is here. And everybody's texting me pictures with them with Kevin Smith. And I'm like, this is insane. And I came back and they were nice enough to get a Jay and Silent Bob issue. And it said, hey, Time Cop, where were you at? Kevin Smith.
That's awesome.
So it's pretty cool. So even though I did get to meet him, it was still a pretty cool experience. So yeah,
that's awesome. Yeah. I wasn't there either. They did not get me anything cool. So they were all sending me the same text, but no one gave me anything cool. So,
but I'm just happy he signed it Time Cop on there. I thought that was pretty cool. He used my nickname. So
right.
The nickname I gave myself to fit in.
And you kind of helped out a little bit with the con setup last year a little bit. And then I don't think you worked on staff, but you definitely came to the show and hung out, and
that was cool. That was a good time. I'm really looking forward to when things can get back to a little bit more normal and we can start doing, you know, those kind of things again, because I miss going and meeting and talking with artists, Vito and Sora, and you know, all those people. So
I miss that too. I miss doing store signings, but you know, the customer safety and staff safety always come above that. So you know, as we get better and the world gets in the right direction, we'll be good. So just plow forward. All right, so let's talk about some comics from this week. My first book is Man's World number 1 from Upshot AWA. So the art in this book's pretty good. And this book kind of reminds me of what's the name of that? It was a book, and then they made it into a movie where it was kind of like it was a guy, they ended up hunting, it was The Deadliest Prey, or the, something. You know what I'm talking about?
I'm not familiar.
We're like a guy is being hunted by someone else, by another human, right?
Okay.
This is like a futuristic setup to that. So it's like a planet where people go to basically like hunt and fish and hang out with like extremely hot women and drink, and they get there and there's like one total doucher in the whole group, and he's like super rude, and they're at a bar and he's like making terrible comments to the bartender, who happens to be a woman, and another guy's kind of like giving him shit about it, and they kind of get into a fight, and then they're like, oh hey, your ship's ready to go do your hunting thing. So they go and do the hunting thing, and in the middle of it they recall everything, and they're like, everybody needs to come back, whatever, there's something going on. And here you find out that the guy from the bar put a put bombs basically in the ship, and it made him wreck out in like a savage land type thing. And then it ends with them being like, all right, we're gonna go hunt these dudes down and show them what a real man's world is, and where you're gonna have to deal with being that. So to me, it was a little out of my wheelhouse of stuff that I enjoy, but it was cool, but it wasn't.
That's a lot of there's a good bit of those AWA books that are like that. If you're not familiar with them, they're newer within the last couple years. It's comic companies started by Joe Quesada and Axel Alonso, I think.
Yeah.
The amazing Joe Quesada and the sometimes okay Axel Alonso. No, I think he fits better with when he was at Marvel. I just don't think he fit in with what they were doing, but they've done some really good stuff. That Year Zero was really good. I think the second volume is out.
Archangel 8 was good. Resistance was good.
Resistance. There's a one shot coming out soon, I think, for Resistance.
I thought it came out last. Was it last week? Maybe.
It might have. Since I'm at home, I'm a little out of touch. But so they've done some really good things there. So that does sound like a really fascinating book. I'm gonna have to check it out. So.
There were a lot of the first wave stuff was very, very good. Hotel was really good. So it definitely fits with their brand of these mini series of pretty good stuff. A lot of it reminds me of like 90s Marvel, like that kind of attitude to it, like the Marvel Knights kind of more
darker,
a little more where edgier. So that's kind of where I thought the book went. But overall, I thought it was good. It just wasn't really my cup of tea. But it was like, I think for people that like that kind of story, like this is going to be a really good book for them. I'm just not
that and guy. If you and I would say there's with the titles we talked about, if you're not sure, give one of them a shot, because there are a handful of really good ones out early in the life of this comic company. So, and it's always good to support those guys and try something new, because it keeps them going. And where would Boom and Image and things like that be if people didn't give Spawn a try? And
Stuff like
that. So
never know what's gonna be the next thing.
Break out of your wheelhouse a little bit, try something new. Yeah,
but please read it and not just sell it online.
yeah.
We much rather you be that guy.
Yeah, for sure. So,
all right. What's your first book?
So I don't know. You want to talk about Green Lantern?
I have another book. Want to save that? We'll save that one for the last one.
I kind of went through Dark Detective a little bit. It might be backwards. I'm kind of trying some of the Future State stuff out, mostly because I've been really hard on DC lately because they're hurting my feelings. There's a lot of rumors and things that are circulating, and it just makes me sad, the stuff that they're going through, which is obviously more AT&T than DC's fault. But you know, I read the next Batman, which I think you said you guys covered last week, and
it was
more, you know, Nick Darrington's art made me want to stick around. The story wasn't so great, and that's kind of what you have with this. The story was so-so, but Dan Mora's art, the story was a little better than the next Batman, but the artwork is fantastic. So I would recommend picking up this or a couple of the other Future State things, because they're trying some new things, and you know, kudos to them for you know, for trying some stuff that's different. Because I know when everybody heard about this 5G event, we all kind of shit on them, like, oh, stupid sidekicks and stuff, but some of it's actually pretty good. So I, you know, give it a shot. I don't want to give any spoilers out. It's definitely different. They have some young writers, but the artists, it looks like they've, you know, tried to find some decent writers or some decent artists. So I don't want to give too much away, but I thought it was a at least a fun one to look at. So
cool. All right. My next book, which I forgot was coming out this week, and until I saw it on Derek Robertson's Twitter, but Space Bastards number one,
nice.
This is from Humanoids Press, or Humanoids Comics. This book was super, like, this is the kind of story I'm into where it's like super bizarre, plot line, killer art, and just weird sci-fi all in one. So the whole point of this book is they're postage men or delivery men, and the delivery, once you pick up the package, basically all the other delivery men are going to try to beat your ass to get the package. So that, and whoever delivers it gets the full amount, because they're like insane amounts of credits. It's like 10,000 credits to deliver this package. So this boring, regular dude loses his job, his bank freezes his accounts, and he's got to figure out a way to make money. And he sees this commercial for it. So he goes to check it out, and off he goes kind of apprenticing for the first time. But as soon as the package gets picked up, all hell breaks loose, and the dude turns on him, and he's like, screw you, dude. Like, you know, this is my package. And like, the guy takes like a knife in the back, and he's just like, can I at least use your med kit? And he's like, screw you, man, I'm leaving. Like, so it's like real crazy. Eventually the guy like kind of turns into almost like a Billy Butcher badass type of kind of guy. And he even kind of like the outfit kind of looks like it, cause it's almost like a trench coaty thing. And Derek Robertson obviously did The Boys. So it's got that gritty look to it that The Boys does so well, or that Derek Robertson does so well. Cause he also did Preacher, and the story worked out really, really well. And this dude, like in this, like by the end of it, I'm just like, yep, I definitely want to read the rest of this. This is insane. It's almost like an early, it's almost like an Image book, or from like the, we'll say late 2010s or early 2010s, like around the time of like Sex Criminals and Bitch Planet. Like, it would really have fit in with those kind of vibed books. But I definitely recommend it. It's Space Bastards number one.
Just you describing it, like, for some reason, like, I'm thinking Fifth Element in my head.
Like, no, it's more like regular kind of just kind of cool art, right?
Yeah.
And it's like a lot of fighting, a lot of just crazy stuff. The guy kind of, the guy he's apprenticing with kind of reminds me of Lobo. But let me get to a page where I'm like, he kind of looks like Butcher. Or like this part of this panel really reminds me of something out of The Boys.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Just like the bloody nose and everything.
Yeah, like the way he's like beat up and he's still like, I'm going to be a badass, reminds me of like something Butcher would do. So that's kind of why I like it. But I would check it out. If you like, I read a lot more indie stuff. I don't really read a lot of big two stuff anymore. And
I've you can tell I'm new to this too, because I went to point at it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait, this is a video. What am I? Like, damn. So many things I got to get used to in this format.
So. Josh Williams, thank you. My mother-in-law bought me this shirt. He said, love the shirt.
Joshua Williams.
Yeah.
What's up, Josh?
But thank you, sir. I do also love the shirt. She got me a hoodie to match, but it's like a movie Black Panther hoodie. So, nice. Yeah. Wakanda forever.
So I didn't read this book yet, but I just want to point it out because this is Daniel Warren Johnson. And if people don't know Daniel Warren Johnson by now, I'm not sure what rock you've been under, but this guy's, you know, he did Space Mullet. He started with some ash cans of some Star Wars, stuff that was like independent stuff he did and printed. But like, you know, covers like this is Robin Eternal, and this is just like sick artwork, you know? So this is one of those ones where I'll go through and I'll read this, but I specifically picked this up for that cover. Artwork is I'm a little backwards sometimes. Since I started working here, I've learned more writers, but as an artist, I always kind of flock to the art first. That's why, like, Joe Matarea, I think that's how you say his name. He's one of my favorites. Did, like, Age of Apocalypse and Battle Chasers and all that stuff. But artwork, usually, I can read an okay story if the artwork is good. But I've learned a lot more writers in the last few years, and I've learned that it's not a bad idea to follow good writers, because good writers usually bring good artists with them.
Exactly. I'm more into the, I originally was more into the art, art end, as a musician, art and music are all the same, and writing is an art. So, but I think as the older I get, the more I start gravitating toward the writer more, because I'm invested in the story and and by that point, you know, artists may change. Hopefully they don't change at least till the end of a story arc, but whatever, DC. So if you can get a good artist or a good writer, you're right, it'll stick. They'll stick and it'll stay with the whole story or a lot of the story. You know, I just talked about Derek Roberts. He worked a lot with Garth Ennis. So if you even look at The Boys, like, he did the first 40 issues of The Boys, and then he still did the covers, and then Russ Braun did the rest of it. So you know, and Russ is just as, you know, he's to me, I don't think he gets enough credit. He is an excellent artist. He does have a couple DC credits, and he does have some other stuff too. Like, he did some Swamp Thing work. He did some other stuff. But you know, that's one of the things where, like, Derek's art stuck with people, and he became that name because he worked with a writer that stayed on a book for a long time.
I always think back to, I think, like, a year or two ago when Donny Cates was really starting to get hot. Somebody tweeted and said, how do you get good artists on a book? And he just responded, pay them.
And
when you look at his stuff, he, you know, these guys are getting paid, because I can't think of a bad artist that he's had on a title that he's done, or anything that he's done at Marvel since. And just a heads up too, if anybody's interested in this guy, he did a book called Murder Falcon, which was amazing, using music instruments to summon kaiju to save the world. It sounds as silly
as
you think. But he also is now coming to Marvel. He's one of the people that are, you know, out of work from DC. He did that Wonder Woman Dead Earth, which was fantastic.
Yep.
And now he's coming, and I think his first thing is the Beta Ray Bill series, and it looks fantastic from the previews I've seen. So,
he kind of reminded me of like a Frank Miller vibe. Like a Frank Miller, Chris Burnham, like that kind of like
a lot of blacks,
and a little bit messy-ish, which is what I like from that.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what I like. And the guy that did, what was it? Like the new X-Men when Morrison was on it.
Frank Quitely.
Yeah. Frank Quitely. Yeah. Like, all those guys have like a similar style to them that I really, really like.
It's like it's almost sketchy in a way, you know, like, there's a lot of people that, they'll do their sketch pencils and then they're very meticulous with their inks.
Yeah.
And these are guys where their inks are pretty much their sketch, you know, it's messy in that way, but it's in a good way. Frank Quitely was one of those ones when I first read that, it was very different X-Men stuff for me. Mm. And I was like, this guy's weird. What the heck's going on? And then I just kind of started to fall in love with it. And now it's one of my, and I'm not a Grant Morrison fan, but that's one of my favorite just runs of comics ever. It's just a good run. So
I always enjoyed that one too. I like Grant Morrison a lot. I'm not saying that he cannot do any wrong, because there's definitely some times where I was like, dude, what are you doing? That's a little way out there. But it really depends on, for me, he's a guy that he's got to be with the right kind of artist to make it good. When he was with Frank Quitely on Batman and Robin, that was
awesome. That was a great one.
That was great. He worked with Chris Burnham on Nameless. That was great too. He worked with Chris Burnham on Batman Incorporated, and it was great. It just really had to be the right style guy. And I think because Chris and Frank have similar styles, that worked out well for them.
So. Yeah.
All right. My last book for the week, and you read this too, is the Future State Green Lantern book.
Yep.
So there are three stories in this book.
Yeah, it's a pretty big book. It's what, like almost 50 some pages, I think.
Yeah, it's real big.
Yeah.
So the first story is a John Stewart story, and
I'm not sure. I've never heard of this writer before. It's Jeffrey Thorne.
Yeah.
But the artist I do know, Tom Rainey. I kept looking at it and I'm like, this looks really familiar. And then I had to look it up, and he had done mostly some X-Men stuff in like the late 90s to 2000s was like his biggest thing. But I'll give you one tidbit about the writer, because I was like, I got to figure out what this guy's done. He has done, he wrote for some TV. So he did Ben 10, and he wrote that awful Marvel's Ultimate Spider-Man that's on. It was a really bad follow-up to that Spectacular Spider-Man. And then he wrote Law and Order Criminal Intent, which is okay, but it is the worst of all the Law and Orders. I'm an SVU fan, and then regular Law and Order. So that's a little background.
I even like UK.
Yeah. So that's a little background intro on this guy, because he's relatively new, I think, to comic books. So, but the artist is not. So, yeah.
The first story is like John Stewart, Salek, and Gnort. And they're just like fighting they're like trying to help these blue people from this army of the Red God, and then there's people in space, and this story for me was very hard to follow. I do, however, like the whole like Mad Max look to John Stewart, though, where he's got like,
yeah, it's really cool,
cornrows, dreads, this crazy laser sword.
At first I thought that sword, because it was orange, I thought I would, and he's got like this orange kind of glowing neck piece.
Yeah.
I was like, oh man, does he have like an orange ring? Like, does he, you know, is that what's powering that sword? But it's not, it's just an awesome laser sword. So,
right. And you find out that his ring is depowered, and then they kind of get stuck with this army that's kicking. So that story to me, just, I felt it was really long and it didn't really go anywhere for me.
It was really long for what it covered. It's like you find out about halfway through or towards the end almost, Kilowog, they do like a flashback, and you find out the whole mission is that he wants them to find the other Green Lanterns and what happened to him. So that's what Jon Stewart is doing. And I'm guessing in his travels has come across this planet of people that needed help from a second rate God in Red, who kind of reminds me of that final bad guy from the Joss Whedon Astonishing X-Men from the other planet that was had killed. So
yeah, I could see that.
The artwork kept me going through this story, but I agree with you. It was a very long story that didn't really cover much. So
yeah, it felt real weird to me, but but I think the next two stories made up for it, in my opinion. So the next story is a shorter story, about half as big, with Jessica Cruz, and she's kind of in like a Green Lantern space base, and that looks like a giant Green Lantern, which is awesome. And Lisa Drax and a couple of the Sinestro Corps show up, and they realize that someone is there, so they hunt her down. And it was they're trying to hunt her down, and she, without powers, totally kicks their ass,
which was great because I'm not a fan of her character. I always got annoyed that it was like, oh, I can't, the willpower, I can't do it, I can't. And then she would do something and then she'd forget how, or she, and it was very whiny. And then they kind of fixed it in this story in like 8 pages. They're like, now she's kind of a badass and more confident, and she doesn't even have the ring, which I thought was really cool considering she couldn't do shit when she had the ring. So for her to take down, or neutralize 3 Sinestro Corps members without a ring was pretty cool. And the artwork's fantastic. I looked up a little bit about the writer, because a lot of these guys, if you're reading the Future State stuff, you're going to run into some writers that you've never heard of and some artists that you never heard of. This is Ryan Caddy. He was featured in DC's 2018 New Talent Showcase. Yeah. He did the Venom's Acts of Evil and that Warframe. And he's a huge tabletop gamer and has wrote stories for the Rolled and Told magazine, which I thought was cool. But I agree with you. This story of the three, because I, which we'll get into, I'm not a huge Guy Gardner fan. Blasphemy. this story did it for me for 2 reasons. The artwork was fantastic, and they made me like a character that I have hated since it was since she was introduced in New 52.
I thought where they made her character good was when Tim Seeley took over writing Green Lanterns. I thought he really made her character a lot more, I guess, relatable is the word I want to use. But I really
that might have been by the time I that might have been when I jumped off, because it was just
and because Lisa Drax is a badass. This is my favorite piece from that just looks so awesome. We're like, she's got the words of the Book of Sinestro, or the words of Parallax, like just start lighting up, and like her crazy energy armor starts showing up, and then she just gets her ass kicked by a axe.
Well, what was cool was she's like, the words of Parallax are burned into my skin, and you can kind of see it because she's blue. There's like yellow script that kind of goes just across her body, and I was like, wow, that's
well, at one point crazy. She was like inside and part of the Book of Parallax during like the New 52, I believe.
Yeah.
Might have been pre New 52. It might have been during Blackest Night, but it was somewhere around there. It was a Geoff Johns era storyline that was great. So the last one is a guy Gardner.
Can I show the final panel?
Yeah, yeah.
Of this story. Okay, so
which I will also be very excited to see how this plans out. It might be.
Yeah, and this is what did it for me, because when it starts out, she's kind of in this grate, and you're like, oh, okay, Jessica Cruz, she's, you know, being scared and hiding because that's how she is, and that's not what this story's about. And then it ends. You know, welcome to the Sinestro Corps. And I'm like, holy shit. And then it says the end. And I'm like, no, this is the best story of the three in here. And I need more of this. So
I have a theory on that after we talk about this last one with Guy. So the Guy storyline for me was the second best story in here. I think the Jessica one was the best one. But the Guy one for me is hilarious because he's complaining with Badge, which, if you don't know who Badge is, he is a Green Lantern squirrel.
Yeah.
Which is hilarious. So Guy goes to this planet. There's a piece of space junk that these two factions of beings are fighting over. He tries to get everybody to stop fighting over it. And then all of a sudden he depowers and falls down and lands in a shack. Pulls it out and he's like, guys, stop doing this. So he basically talks him into peace, and like, it's the next thing you know, it's like a year later and he set up a little bar, and then it's 5 years later and he's set up and he's still there and they're still fighting over it. And then it's 25 years later. And at that point he has like this awesome, like, hoodie pullover thing with two beers and a Green Lantern symbol on it,
and is like, he's a little chunky, like his neck is starting to fill out into his face.
You can tell he's gotten very comfortable living on this planet. And then all of a sudden, like, this random third party starts up some shit, and then at the end the main man shows up with Lobo. So the story really, I like the art in it. I thought it worked well for the story.
It was good art.
And B, it reminded me a lot of the Guy Gardner that we would see in Warrior and in Red Lanterns, where he was a little more of an a-hole.
Yeah, when he became a Red Lantern.
Yeah, so that's kind of why I liked that story. I'm not a giant Guy Gardner fan, but he's up there in the Green Lantern. He's my second favorite Green Lantern. He's my second favorite Green Lantern. Third. Alan Scott would be my second favorite one. He's my third favorite Green Lantern. But I just thought the story worked out very well. I didn't think it was too much. I didn't think it was too little. But my theory on this book, and I was talking to somebody about this today, and it clicked on my ride home, that I feel that this book is the setup for how they're going to have the next Green Lantern books come out in the next wave. Cause we haven't really had one besides the Grant Morrison one after Green Lanterns ended.
Yeah. It was like the season one and season two.
Yeah. We had Black Stars in the middle.
Black Star. Yeah.
So I really feel that with the HBO show coming out next year, that they're gonna somehow move into that to make it a universe that people care about, so they know the characters for the show. So I think we're gonna see a John Stewart, Kilowog, Gnort core book. I think we're gonna see a Jessica Cruz solo book. Maybe she gets back with Baz again. I thought their balance was pretty good.
That was something that was good about them from the New 52, was they did balance each other out. I just didn't like Herb as the whiny kind of character, but yeah, I think that would be cool if they brought him back and renewed, you know, brought their relationship back together as Green Lanterns.
And then, you know, having a Guy book would be cool. If it was Guy and Hal, that'd be fine. If it was Guy and Kyle, it'd be fine. Cause I think, I'm not a big Kyle fan, but I think when Guy and Kyle are together, they balance each other out for me, because I always thought that Kyle was a little too naive and a little too like I never thought he was like more of like the the really strong, strong-willed character. I always thought of it as more like the, like he has a lot of will, but he's not, you know, he's not the in-your-face kind of will. He's more the back end. Where Guy's the other way. He is totally the in-your-face guy, and he, you know, he's the kick-ass and take names later, kind of guy. Where Kyle's the other way around. So I always thought they balanced each other very well. So that would be a cool book if that worked out. My only concern is I really feel it needs to be somebody that these books need to be no more than two writers doing whatever, two to four Green Lantern books. And they need to have consistent art and they need to have consistent story that is shared between all the books. I don't care if it's two books. I don't care if it's four books. I want it to be a very solid thing. I want it to be like as solid and put together as Geoff Johns's Recharge through a Rebirth, even
Rebirth,
Recharge, his run before the 50 new 52, the new 52 Sinestra run that he did, all that stuff. Like when he was doing that, and then he was overseeing like Red Lanterns and Sinestro and what was the other one?
That was when Green Lantern was the best for me, when Geoff Johns was either writing it or involved in the writing.
Like we had a core book, Emerald Warriors was good. I just audited all these titles today. So I was like, oh man, I missed this. And I happened to be talking to somebody about it because we were talking about the Future State stuff, and somebody else had read the Green Lantern book, and we had talked the same. He had the same feelings that you and I did on it. So, and Bo, actually, he and I talked about this yesterday. We all three of us actually felt the same about this book. So, I just, like I said, the John Stewart part just felt very weird. And I don't know. It was so left field that
they all kind of say the end after each story, and not the end question mark. If I remember correctly, which is kind of weird, that you would bring these two stories in.
Well, remember, like we're only going to get two issues of each of these books. So the next
the John Stewart one does have a next. So,
So the next issue will probably be the conclusion of the John Stewart stuff. Probably a Baz story and a Kyle story or a Hal story, because if this is broken into three, those are the three that we haven't, or the four that we haven't seen. Although Grant Morrison's been doing the stuff for Hal. So maybe they're not going to touch on that. Although I'm pretty sure that book is done after issue 12 of season two. Like, I don't think they're doing a season three. So
I believe you're correct.
But overall, I mean, like the Future State stuff's been hit or miss for me in general.
I think you're going to find more good artists in the Future State stuff than you will good writers. I feel like there's a plethora of amazing artists out there compared to what there is for writers. So it seems like a lot of young writers, obviously this guy was, you know, writing Law and Order and things like that. And the other guy's writing, you know, Ben 10. So, you know, these are definitely some new writers, but like, I recognize some of the artists' names. And if you don't know Phil Jimenez, he is the guy. He is probably the best artist, for me at least, at DC. He's been coming up for a while, and his first big thing was that when they did Super Sons before Bendis had to go and screw it up and make Jonathan Kent, you know, 17 or whatever. That's what I think. I think you're going to get really good art out of these books, or more consistently than you will writing. So
I agree. I think a lot of this came out of their talent search that they did last year. Or the year before, I think. And that was kind of what this whole thing was supposed to be, was like an experiment in that kind of let's see how people like these new people and what these new people can do with it. So it's kind of cool. I'm kind of glad they're only two issues each, though.
Yeah.
But last week I talked about the Wonder Woman. I thought the Wonder Woman book was excellent. So.
Oh yeah, I think she's a cool character. I'm glad that they decided to move forward with a TV show for her. Mm. I think the costume looks great. Although I will say, no, and I'm like one of the only.
See, ones. I thought it was weird that she had sleeves but no pants.
Yeah, it is a little weird. I always liked the one that they didn't use, that Jim Lee did, where Wonder Woman had like the pants and then the short cut black leather jacket on, you know, like kind of Superboy-ish. And they never ended up using it. They was when they were first trying to redesign the character when Jim Lee went over.
I thought you were talking about the one it sounds similar to the one that they used when Straczynski did the tail end of the run before New 52. Like that was freaking awesome. Like I thought that was great, where she had like the black pants, had the stars down the side, pants and the red. That one.
Loved it. And people were so mad because they're like, Wonder Woman has pants. And I'm sorry, but like, if you like DC, especially older DC, and that mid-crop leather jacket doesn't do it for you, that's DC Superboy, you know? I loved it. I thought that was an awesome outfit and a good modern. It was probably ahead of its time as far as the design goes, because now everybody's saying, you know, well, they don't need to have skirts and things like that. And you see in the Supergirl TV show, they change her suit so it's more of a one piece with legs, you know, pants.
Well, they did that in the comics too. They'd updated it in the comics a little bit. And there were a couple versions of her where she did have like more of a full suit and pants. And then there were some where she had just really big boots. And there's some that she had like no skirt but had like the unitard. So it was, costumes are going to update no matter what, and you know we really shouldn't be too crazy about it. But
everybody seems to be more hard on DC when DC, like Marvel, could be like, "Hey, here's an upgraded suit," and people are like, "Cool, whatever." But for some reason, DCs are a lot more iconic. So the minute somebody touches it, everybody's like, "No, you can't do that. Superman can't have a collar," you know, things like that.
Well,
like,
I thought it was just weird that. The thing they complained about on that suit actually was more that he didn't have the trunks. Like, he didn't have the red trunks.
And he had that belt that kind of went, like, into the pants and out. You know?
It just kind of kept it pulled around his waist.
Because, like, you need a belt if the underpants are over top so they don't fall down. But if you don't have the underpants on, it's kind of weird that he had the belt still, right?
Right? Yeah. It was
what is it holding up?
Totally weird. Suit. I don't know.
In the words of Mitch Hedberg, who's the real hero here?
But I mean, they didn't complain as much when Spider-Woman changed to a similar outfit. Because she went from like the classic outfit. Yeah, the story that led into the pregnancy, like where she had like the biker outfit, which I really thought was great.
I just didn't like the glasses. They were weird, like pointed glasses. I thought that was kind of weird, but I loved the rest of the suit. Yeah. I thought was awesome.
Yeah, the goggles were a little bit weird, but everything else was fine. I like the black suit that she has now, the black and red. I thought it reminds me a little more of Miles.
It's definitely very Miles-ish. Yeah, you know?
But I enjoy it. It's kind of got a good mix of the two looks to it for me.
And that book has been fantastic. If you're not reading
Spider-Man. If that book would not have come out the week that the world shut down, that book would be huge. And I mean huge. I've gotten so many people to read it.
Her, what was she doing in the first issue? She was security at this rich dude's like 8-year-old daughter's birthday bash on a boat or something.
It was her sweet 16, I think.
Sweet 16, that's what it was.
And then like the boat ends up like getting raided, and it was very like James Bond vibe to it. And that's really what the whole vibe of the book's been, and I've loved that book. I called it the best book people aren't reading this year. But every single person that I've had got to read that book has bought every issue back. Now they're at the point where we can't find a lot of those because that's when we had kind of cut orders when we came back. We didn't know what people were going to do. But we have a ton of number ones that are going to be hitting the back issue bins soon.
Yeah, so. Definitely. If you haven't read it, check it out, because it's an awesome book and the artwork is fantastic and the story is really good too. So, yeah.
Yep. All right. So let's talk just a few minutes and get an update on where we are with the King and Black storyline. You're reading, I think, literally all of it. I'm all reading just the parts of the books that happen to be what I read. So.
Yeah. I haven't read the Thunderbolts one that came out today or yesterday. I haven't read any of the ones that came out yesterday. I flipped through the Planet of the Symbiotes. It looks amazing. And then, I mean, this is how good of a writer Donnie Cates is. And I don't think, if you're watching this, you probably already, people probably already know how great Donnie Cates is. You know, you have Null takes Eddie and throws him off of the roof at the end of the first issue. And in the next issue of Venom, it's an entire issue of him falling. And you would probably be like, oh, you know, like this Green Lantern John Stewart story. It's not going anywhere. It's just them doing the same fight. He's falling the entire issue, and I keep turning the page because it's so good. It's Eddie inside his mind, all the things that he's thinking. And it's just like he's just used it as an opportunity to dive deeper into Eddie Brock, into that character. And then the start of the second issue of King and Black, literally two issues later, he finally hits the ground, you know. Yeah. But I don't know if there's a lot of writers out there that could write a story about a guy falling off of a skyscraper for the entire issue and make it that good. Mm-hmm. I think the thing I like about Donnie Cates and the way he writes, he always has that really good wow moment in his books. And he's not afraid to try stuff. And that also might be a tribute to Marvel just loosening up the reins for writers and saying, you know, a couple years ago, we probably would never had Immortal Hulk, you know, that probably would have been like kicked to the curb as an idea. So it feels like they're loosening the reins a little bit. And that's why we're getting some really good stuff. This whole King and Black story so far has been awesome. Seeing the planet completely like covered in like gooey symbiote stuff. New York is like completely covered. Really cool moment with Johnny Storm. He comes in and he's like, hey, you know, get Eddie out of here. We need him. He's like, I'm going to go supernova because, you know, the heat will hurt the symbiotes. And he's like, yeah, but then you pass out when you go supernova. And he's like, just tell him I said something cool when I passed, you know, when I did it. And then he goes supernova, and him and the X-Men and everybody get taken over by, you know, symbiotes, and Null's just destroying stuff. And then here comes Dylan Brock. Nobody wanted to listen to him. He's over top of Eddie, who's dying, and they're trying to help him out with the symbiote, and nobody wants to listen to him. And then he's like, boom, and shows off his power. And this is like kind of the moment for Dylan that's been building since that issue 9 of Venom when he first got introduced.
Right.
So it's very dark, and it's a little different from Marvel. So if you're a DC fan, it's always kind of like, oh, Marvel's too like Disney and popish. This is a story to definitely check out because it's very dark, and I think there's going to be a lot of darkness left when this is over in the Marvel universe.
It's really reminding me of like a very dark version of Spider Island. Like, yes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like if Spider Island were like the nightmare version of Spider Island. And that's kind of how I look at it. Like it's like Spider Island and zombies and I don't know, some other crazy big crossover, like all mixed together is kind of how the vibe I'm getting from it as I read parts, because I'm reading the main story and then just like the parts of books that I'm actually reading. So like Thor and Spider-Woman, and I picked up the Union because I love Union Jack. So
The Union wasn't too bad. The first issue was a little slow, but it picked up in the second issue. Mm-hmm. And then what was the other one that was, the Namor book was a little weird. The last issue of Atlantis Attacks kind of kicked off to the Namor storyline, and they're on the second issue. And it's that's probably been the weakest of the tie-ins for me so far, is the two names. But I've never been a big fan of his anyways. But overall, like, the story's just, they've got fantastic writers. They've got fantastic artists. This is an event that you definitely don't want to miss.
They've got Fantastic Four. I mean,
everybody. This is, you know, I remember Donnie Cates tweeted, he's like, if you're a writing, he tweeted the writers of that were writing for Marvel. He's like, if you're writing a story, I'm telling you right now, your characters are not prepared for what's going to happen in King and Black. And to see the X-Men get completely taken over, and then they're talking to Xavier and they're saying, hey, we need more people, can we just use a gate? And they're like, no, you can't use a gate, you're not coming to our secret island getaway and bringing your symbiote with you. But
great.
So yeah,
cool.
Well, it's been a good book. Check. So yeah.
Yeah, definitely check it out. There are still some number ones and twos of the main story floating around the company. May not get a main cover, but
not a lot, though. That thing, right. I go in the K section on the shelf is just bare for the most part. So if you can't find an issue, ask somebody. We'll try and track one down for you. Yeah. But ask them to sign you up for, because it's really easy to go to the counter and say, hey, I want, you know, all the King and Black stuff. It's a click of a button, and we can add it to your sub list. So you don't miss out, and we can make sure we get the orders, you know, adjusted for that. So
right. All right, other big Marvel stuff is tomorrow WandaVision starts.
Yeah.
I am super pumped about this because I love Scarlet Witch and Vision. Like, I love them as a couple in the Avengers comics. When I started reading comics, they were a couple. I read some review today of someone who got to see the first three episodes, and they said it's very much so like a horror thriller. So I feel like what we're going to get is like the Marvel version of Stranger Things is what we're going to see. Cause all the action in Stranger Things really happened in the last couple episodes. They said the same kind of thing is going to happen here. I'm really excited to see all of that play out. I love the costumes. I love everything about it. So like from the previews. So next week, we're going to watch the first episode, and we're going to review the first episode on next week's show. Tim's going to join me again for that. And hopefully if he does a good job.
It wasn't today. I woke up at 7:30. I'm like, my wife has to start work at 9. I'm like, let's go. We're getting up at 7:30. WandaVision today. Put on Disney Plus. Shit. Tomorrow. So, you know,
great.
I think I got into Scarlet Witch and them when they started doing like the House of X and stuff, and she was kind of going crazy, and that was you know, they did the Avengers Disassembled stuff when she went nuts. And I'm knowing that from what Marvel has said, that this is going to be the kickoff to the multiverse of madness. Yeah. And she's going to be a big part of that. I'm really expecting there to be these really big cliffhangers that then you into the movies. And I'm just excited to see what happens. I love both of those actors, and I think they do a great job with those characters. And I'm interested to see, I can't wait to see them in the old school, like suits and stuff. And to see that scene, it's going to be really cool. So,
yeah, I'm waiting for Ghost Vision, like the White Vision, to come.
I know.
I really want that.
I told somebody when Infinity War came out and they ripped, you know, Thanos rips the stone out. I said, ooh, I wonder if we're going to get some form of like Ghost Vision where he's all white or grayed out like that, because you saw all the color come from out of him. But they did say that he's not just the stone. He's all these other parts of Tony and everybody. So, that would be really cool if they did that clear ghost vision. I would love that throwback.
Yeah, I would really enjoy seeing that, but I don't know if we're going to get it, but because that was like the West Coast Avengers Vision, and that was cut like them two in the West Coast Avengers was like a big thing for me because I loved the West Coast Avengers, even though most people hated it. I was always a big fan of it. And when they brought them into the movies, and then we saw like them, War Machine, and who's the other one?
Falcon
and Quicksilver. Like all at the, or no, it wasn't Quicksilver because he was
not
dead.
Quicksilver. But you're talking about when they were at the Avengers,
at the end of Age of Ultron. Yeah. When they were at like the Avengers like campus in New York.
Yeah,
I was like, man, like this
Avengers Ascent.
Yeah, Avengers. Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. But if that would have been, that building would have been in California, I'd have been like, mm-hmm. I was like, West Coast Avengers, here it is, let's go. Like, this is your lineup. That was really where I thought we were going to see that. Hawkeye was in it.
You know, I was thinking it was going to be more of a kickoff into like the new Avengers brand.
Right.
But well, I could totally see that with the West Coast also, you know, just basically here's an alternate Avengers team.
Yeah. And I thought that would have been cool. But we might not see that. I know they did. Kevin Feige did say we will get another Avengers movie some point, but not for another probably 5 years at this point. So we'll see how that goes.
I'm going to make a prediction too, because in the last trailer, they show Wanda and then there's a cradle. And I'm going to make the prediction because a lot of people have been talking about Young Avengers. They just recast that girl to play Cassie.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. And we're getting the Kate Bishop Hawkeye. I don't think we're going to see, I don't think we're going to see the twins.
No, but you're going to see that there's somebody's born or that there's a baby or something, and that's kind of going to be like the lead into them being characters in this universe. But yeah, I don't think they're going to be like this big part of the show or anything. But you never know. If they are introduced, that's when she starts to go mad, when she, where's my babies? And they're like, you don't have any babies. You're married to a robot.
You never know. We might see that in the very first episode. And by the end, and maybe that's the whole thing, is at the end of the season, maybe they take the kids away and she goes nuts and everything's crazy. And that's what just leads into it. So,
yeah. So I wouldn't be surprised if you see that and like kind of a little bit of that House of M
vibe
twist
to
in there. So, but I'm really excited. So I can't wait to talk about that next week. So
yeah, me too. I'm real, real pumped. And then last thing really is, so our friends over at Comic Book Pit, I'm going to give them a little bit of a plug. I saw today they're going to be doing movies with issues. So it's movies that are based on comic book like comic book stuff. And I don't know how well they're going to dive into it. I really hope they get into like cool shit like Hellboy and From Hell and V for Vendetta, like stuff that that doesn't always get enough limelight that it really should. Push was a comic, like Scott Pilgrim obviously was like a manga, Americanized manga. Like there was a lot of cool movies that people don't know are based on comic books. And I'm really excited to hear them. It's going to be Dan and our buddy Jeremiah, who does the cosplay karaoke's with us. He's my co-host for the Cosplay Karaoke's, which I also cannot wait to get back to doing because those are just a ton of fun. And, you know, but unfortunately, you know, things are weird. We could just do a TikTok channel. It'll be fine. So or not. Oh, Men in Black. Yeah. Somebody just mentioned Men in Black. You know, that's a huge one.
If you want a Men in Black, I have Men in Black number one that did not sell on my Facebook auction for $40. So it's at the Waterfront store. If you want it, if anybody wants it, it's still available. It's going to go on the wall. So
cool. And you can message the Waterfront Facebook at NDC Waterfront and mention that Tim said something about it, and first come first serve. If you want it, you can just get it right now.
I can transfer it to another store. So if you're more out Butler or Elwood, whatever, you know, something you want, I'll transfer it. So yeah.
Cool. All right, guys. Well, thanks so much for being with us this week. Remember to shop local. Doesn't need to be in NDC, but we also appreciate the business. There are a lot of cool comic stores out there, especially in Pittsburgh. We are, you know, we are one of many. We're all in this nerd fraternity together. So shop local, support local, if you're in any of the NDCs, definitely say hi. We will always, we're always willing to talk to customers and hang out a little bit. And thanks again so much, guys. You can follow us on our Facebook feed. You can listen to this on Spotify or on the website. And it's a good time. So we'll see everybody next week. I'm John. With me this week is Tim. And my thanks dog is licking my face. So, all right, guys. Thanks so much. And we'll see you next week.